You have seen work expressed in a need and a want to change. The recent business of Watkins, when the sun's been out of production, I'd have gone to my local news agent and challenged them to stop. They've changed, they've wanted. And if you're saying to me that you've gone to situations where you expressed your feelings about appetite shifting to groups of people, I would suggest you've not been around Bermondsey very much. Tessie or Ireland, and I'm thinking about it, I want a lot of change.
Are you telling me that people don't want to live in decent houses? They don't want to be secure. They don't want. They don't want to know that their children are going to be fed and clothed.
Well, I'm suggesting to you, if I come up with a sort of idea that you're coming out, which I've tried to try out before, they think I'm a bloody lunatic.
Don't take it personally.
Would you mind if I said to you all that in my experience that the most beautiful part is bigger than it is? That you talk to a lot of people, they see the problems as personal problems, you know. They don't see the problem with the business and what's happening and where would they have it, you know. And they talk to a lot. You get people to be working at home, you know, that they, there's got to be change. There's got to be change, there's fundamental change.
Yes, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think this idea that somehow people blame themselves for the situation that they're in is endemic in our society. We're taught to think that way. We're taught to think that if only we worked harder, then we'd get a better job. That if only we were nicer people, that we would be happier. If only we did this, that, or the other, as individuals, that some kind of change will come about. And they don't realise that everybody is thinking this. That everybody is going around thinking, if only I was different, instead of thinking, if only we collectively did something to make things different. They don't realise the extent to which their individual system, situation is a result of the total system that we live in. And we're taught to think that way. We're taught to believe that we can get on in life if only we as individuals work harder. Yeah, if I heard you right, then yes, it's true. At the moment, as far as I'm aware, trade union pension funds are the biggest holders of equity capital in Britain today. Now, that again comes back to my point. The whole question that we're looking at this evening is, what can trade unionists do to change society? We can start looking at what trade unions do with our money. We can start looking at where the money that we pay into pension funds are invested. And I think that's an important question. This idea of trade unions being incorporated into the capitalist system itself is an important one. It means that the capitalist class has a much bigger hold over us than they would otherwise have. So long as our money through trade unions is tied up in the capitalist system itself, then it means that we are in a much weaker position as a consequence.
At the back.
I just like to spring in defence of my fellow workers, and those people think they're all a bit thick. The trouble is that this bloody stupid system, which is called capitalism, is shot through with all sorts of contradictions. We've seen some of them administrate tonight. We saw, for example, on the screen before the speaker, we saw the policemen who were being used to force the issue for McGregor and the NCB. And we should remind ourselves that policemen also are members of working class. They may have got a good wage in those weeks, got £350 a week, so we were told. And also, of course, we should also remember that they are probably trained unionists, even if they aren't affiliated to the TUC. The other contradiction is when you speak and mention that she doesn't know anybody who's happy with the capitalist system. Well, I should imagine that Rupert Murdoch at £37 million per annum income is bloody happy with it. Very, very happy indeed. And the stupid thing is, that people actually believe that their man has been working very, very hard.
Yeah.
And here is another contradiction of the system. The vast majority of people think he's a very, very hard worker, and he's managed to create this new arrangement out of lobbying. And look what he's doing. Look what he's doing. It's actually taught. It would seem to me, as a socialist, it would seem to me that it might perhaps have even done the party a bit of good, because it actually shows the truth about the stupidity of the system in which workers can be sent straight onto the scrap heap at a moment's notice when it really suits them, no matter how hard they organise through their efforts through trade union. Which brings me to the third contradiction. I think it's an unfortunate fact that the speaker didn't arrive tonight. But the speaker, the other speaker, I presume, would also claim that he's a member of the working class. He is a trade union leader. And this is another fundamental point, that if the capitalist system is run with commodity production, it means that every single worker, in defence of their particular job, have got to treat themselves and create themselves into a commodity. And that means that they must do their best to sell themselves to the bosses. And that means that trade union leaders are in exactly the same position. And then if you think that it's very, very difficult, you think that your fellow workers are sick, those are the sort of contradictions which makes it very, very hard to get the message over.
Then two or three people question the importance of the whole trade union issue itself. But in other words, why should socialists really bother with any of this? Why should we really go on about the whole question of ballots, trade unions, and what have you? I'd simply suggest a very key reason why we should bother about all of this. And that is that socialism doesn't arise as some kind of abstract idea which people just think of in the abstract as an ideal to aspire to. Socialism has obviously grown directly out of the material conditions that people have suffered. People have actually had to think of socialism as a solution to problems they faced, rather than just thinking of it for its own sake. In that sense, socialism has arisen out of the class struggle that takes place, rather than simply as a brainwave. And of course, in exactly the same way, trade unions arose out of the very same struggle on the part of exactly the same people as a response to exactly the same problems. So clearly, trade union issues and socialism are intimately related, and it would be most dangerous for us ever to try, conceptually or otherwise, to separate these two aspects of the class struggle. What we should do, however, as socialists, is in a sense to politicise those arguments, to look at the trade union issue and say, well, obviously we're active trade unionists for the sake of our own day-to-day survival, but we see and we suffer the limitations of trade unions. In a sense, as socialists, that's the point that we're trying to stress, the limitations of trade unions. That's not the same as the irrelevance of trade unions, simply the limitations of the action that we finally have to take. One other point I wanted to mention was that somebody earlier was talking about having stuck something up at work, and that's a great thing to hear that people are doing that kind of thing. But it may seem an obvious point, I'll make it anyway, but it's in activities like that that there's bound to be strength in numbers. You know, if the track that you're sticking up, whatever it may be, whatever you call it, the activity you're going in for is not an isolated activity, then of course this is what cooperation is all about. That's the whole point of the socialist movement, socialist organisation, is that you can be much more effective in your arguments if you operate organisationally together, because you can simply share talents, share abilities, share strengths, which otherwise you'd be totally out on your own. And I think that, in fact, answers the point the bloke at the back made. When he says you put socialist ideas at work and people think he's a lunatic, surely exactly the same answer applies. You only seem a lunatic if you're relatively isolated. If, in fact, you can go in there and say, look, I'm a member or an active participant in an organisation or a movement, that movement comprises hundreds or thousands of people, it's not just me, then of course it becomes much harder for those people to say, oh, well, you're just a lunatic. You can have one lunatic or two lunatics around, but once in a major city you have hundreds or thousands of these so-called lunatics, then clearly that is gradually becoming the prevailing common sense. So I think in both cases, both questions we had, and indeed the earlier question about trade unions, all of these seem to hinge on the same thing, that what we need, in fact, is socialist cooperation. We need to look at the strengths of trade unions, and use, I think Karl Marx said that trade unions could be a kind of training school for a socialist revolution. Just learn the lessons from history and move on to the next step, which is, of course, political emancipation, one by ourselves for ourselves.
There's been mention a few times tonight as well about the NGA dispute down at Wapping. I think you take the line that we should be supporting the NGA in a sense. I think I take the opposite view in a sense. Why I should support these NGA men. Because the last 10 years, they've been getting, 20 years or so, they've been getting £300, £400, £500 a week, printing what I don't know, the sun and the times and all these other things, keeping me and fellow men, fellow working men, in total ignorance. So basically, why should I support them now they're out of a job because of their own foolishness in a sense, because they were getting paid £300-400 a week? It was worth their while printing that stuff. It was worth their while. Now, they're out on the dole, they're expecting me to support them. They're in charge of all the information. Then they want my support.
First of all, I'd say that...
love money, that's what they were getting.
That I wouldn't support unconditionally the NGA. What I abhor is the fact that another trade union will cross picket lines and engage in divisive trade union activity. But to take up your other point about why should we support NGA members because after all they earn all this money and they've been printing rubbish like the sun. First of all, we don't know that they've been earning that amount of money. I mean, there's a lot of disinformation put out by newspapers like the Sun and the Daily Star. They did it in most strikes about, you know, trade miners or trade unions earn this amount of money and, you know, therefore they price themselves out of jobs.
Yeah, I'm not arguing on that case. I'm just saying it was worth their while at that particular period to print that money, that kind of rubbish, like the Sun.
If it wasn't worth their while, if they weren't getting paid for it, they wouldn't do it. Would you work printing the Sun for nothing?
No.
Some members of the working class. Now, okay, you can argue that, you know, they needn't choose to go into the police force. Similarly, you could argue that printers needn't choose to go and work for the Sun. And, you know, one could argue that if they were politically conscious, if they were socialists, they might not do that. But nevertheless, they are members of the working class, as all workers are forced to do. They're forced to sell their labour power in return for a wage or salary. How much control do you have over what kind of work you do in capitalism? I would argue that a lot of socialists are compromised in the work they do. I'm compromised in the work that I do. I teach. And I'm forced to teach stuff that I don't like, that I don't agree with, and if I had my way, I would be teaching something totally different. But I can't afford to do it. I think that we need to be a little bit more careful about condemning workers for the kinds of work that they do on the grounds that they do have a choice. How much choice do people really have in capitalism?
I want to ask some questions, but I would just say the Socialist Party doesn't support the people who produce the Sun. I don't know where that idea comes from. We're not supporting the people who produce the Sun or the Times or any of these things. I mean, put it this way, I would support the people who produce the Sun in the same way as if I saw the Queen jumping off the top floor of Buckingham Palace, I'd hold out a tea bag, you know, to catch her in. That's the extent to which I support the journalists on the Sun. You know, I don't care to. You know, I would say being sent to work in Wapping, that is just about, you know, what they deserve. But if anyone's at the work in Wapping for any length of time, you'll know what I mean. That's it. That's the end of Samantha Fox. Now, come to the questions. Oh, the thickness. Are the workers thick? I would ask another question. Are the capitalists thick? Because I would suggest to you a capitalist class is made up not of extraordinarily clever people who are so cunning. You want to go into the House of Lords someday. Imagine what would happen in the House of Lords if there was a leak in the ceiling. You know, who would fix it? You've got hundreds of members of the House of Lords, not a bloody plumber amongst them. Even Lord Chapel wouldn't know how to do it. All he knew how to do was to sell plumbers' jobs down a bloody river. He didn't know how to fix pipes. So these people are thick. Now, workers aren't thick. I mean, I'll give you an example. I've got a bad stomach. I've got a big pain in my stomach, gutter. I've got a nurse sitting next to me, a nurse sitting next to her, a nurse sitting behind me, they're all giving me advice. It's like being in a bloody hospital. I go home from a meeting tonight, I'm going to write a letter to the local paper and say I went to a socialist party meeting, I've never been so well treated in my life. Now, workers aren't thick, they know all about it, they know about bloody intestines, they know about pipes. You go out in the street now and say to someone, what's the way to Farringdon? Bloody tell you, go down here, that's there. You've all encountered these people. They know their bloody way anywhere, one area of London to another. They direct you all the bloody way to Glasgow. In other words, Workers are not thick. Workers, who runs a King's Cross station over there? Thick people? Of course not. So I would suggest to you, the capitalist class are thick. And the capitalist class have to depend upon people who are clever to do their work for them, even to do their thinking for them, even indeed to do their managing for them, and their accountancy for them, to count their money for them. Now, I'd ask you all another question. Any of you got illusions about the trade unions? Have any of you ever been to a trade union conference? Because if you go to a trade union conference and stand outside selling the Socialist Standard or giving out leaflets, you might just as well be at a conference at the CBI. Because walking past you are all these bloody people with suits on and ties on and bloody attaché cases full of papers, which they've never read, you know, because they're all papers, incidentally, supporting workers in Nicaragua and supporting workers in Chile. They don't know what's going on in their own union, incidentally, but it's very easy to pass a paper resolution, you know. We the Crouch End branch of the Engineering Workers Union demand of the Nicaraguan government that they bring all political prisoners out. Oh, right, okay, you know, the Nicaraguan government or the government of Venezuela, wherever the bloody hell, they read it and say, oh, well, this is it, we've had the instruction from Crouch End, open up the jails, that's about all we can do now. But of course, that's what trade unions do. I mean, I was a trade union secretary in my union, bloody, you know what I represented, I've told you it means before. I represented the bloody historians and the philosophers in a university. We were the people who told you where you've been and whether you exist. We went on strike, the country wouldn't only come to a standstill, they wouldn't even know if we were still here. So, the position is this. We used to sit around in our union branches, we used to pass the most marvellous resolutions. We used to have a resolution, free all people from prison in South Africa. And someone moved an amendment, what about Poland? And said, oh, all right, put in Poland. Someone said, well, I don't think we should put in Poland. We put that in last week. Come off it. But going to the trade union conferences, what are they talking about? Expense accounts.
Yeah.
You know, how much does it cost? You know what, if you want to hear what's called creative accountancy, you want to see trade unionists at work working out expense accounts. You know, the trade unionist had to travel from Islington to Haringey. He managed to get a first-class fare via bloody Newcastle. You know what I mean? So I can tell you now, you want to talk to these people. They look at you as if you're dirt. They say, what are you? You're one of the people who actually, you're just a trade union member. You're not at this conference. You're not invited here. I tell you now, I was given a job on consultancy in the trade union committee of the education committee of the Southeast TUC, educating the Southeast TUC, all these union officials. It's like, you know, trying to bloody educate the royal family in humanitarianism, trying to get these people to understand trade union principles and history and the class struggle. Now, you want to have a look at the restaurants in Congress House, it's just down the road. You want to have a look at the restaurants that they've got in these trade union offices in the centre of London. And you also want to look at the fact, and Morgan can tell you more about it than I can, but the trade unionists who have to stand on picket lines outside their own union while trade union leaders walk through the picket line. For example, when the NUM was based down here in London, the secretaries went on strike, and Scargill walked through the picket line. Clive Jenkins walked through an Apex picket line at Aston's. When the bank workers were on, at their union, when the workers there were on strike, their union leader walked through. So don't have any illusions about these people. These people have got the trade unions tightly in their hands. And my view is the job in relation to the trade unions is to set up as socialists your own activity quite separate from these leaders. You don't even consult with them. That's my attitude. I'm not suggesting it's in Socialist Party's attitude, but I'm not interested in bargaining with the trade unions. But on this question about workers being thick, the final point I always make, the workers are not thick, the workers are conned. And there is a difference between being thick and being conned. Because if you, Comrade Chairman, are thick, and the way you chair this bloody meeting, I've got my doubts. I can tell you now, If you, Comrade Chairman, were thick, I wouldn't waste my time with you. Which, on the whole, I don't. I wouldn't waste my time with you. But if you, on the other hand, are deluded and conned, then, of course, I'll take my side. I'll persuade you. I'll talk to you. So you've got to choose your words carefully. Because the left think the workers are thick. And therefore, what the left says is, we'll liberate the workers without them knowing about it. Because they're too thick to do it themselves. We'll liberate the workers. The next morning, the workers will wake up. They'll still be thick. And, you know, you'll say to them, on right, instead of the Today programme, it'll be, you know, the, you know, Good Morning People programme. And they'll say, well, you're liberated now. Go to work. You're working for us. Now, that's not what we are saying. We are saying that those who are the victims of a confidence trick can be educated out of it. Now, I would say to you, there's no one more thick than the person who understands that power is within his grasp and doesn't take it. That's a person who's thick. That's a person who's insensitive. Because if you understand, you see, the workers out there in the street who don't understand their class position, I'm not going to point the accusing finger at them. I'm not going to call them thick. But if I see a worker in this room who does understand his class position, who does understand what needs to be done, and who does understand the power that he's got, and he sits around sort of in a historical sulk saying, oh, well, the workers have let me down. They haven't lived up to my expectations. You know, the ignorant wretches. Why don't they do what they ought to do? What I know they can do. And where is that person when it comes to the day-to-day work of the Socialist Party? Not in it, because he's too busy philosophizing about the workers being thick. I would say that's a person who's insensitive and unconscious in his political needs. And that's a person who doesn't need to be educated, but he does need to be activated.
Now, two hands are in there, but at the same time, though, they don't know what to choose. You've spoken once, so...
Yeah, I was great. This observation about the riot that you might have heard about that took place on Hounslow Heath this afternoon. There was a massive riot on Hounslow Heath. But the only difference about this riot was that it was fully planned, and most of the participants in it were police. Because what they did, they built up a whole new special riot city in London to prepare police to use the weapons and the gas canisters and all of their strategies that have been carefully planned in order to deal with what they kept on referring to on the news as being the next riot. And there were sort of vivid descriptions of what was happening. They got a lot of people in off the streets to lob bricks at them and to feign riots.
They were hard to recruit.
The best ones got promotions to sergeant positions. And they kept on referring to it as being, you know, the next riot. This is especially, they're comparing it with one of those cowboy sets, you know, especially rigged that little city where they can cut coppers off by the coach load and train them how to use all these weapons. And it's going to be for the next riot, all of the best strategies. And it occurred to me, thinking about that, you know, there's an awful lot of thought which is resigned to the next, you know, the next riot. It's like talk about the next war. You know, the way things are in capitalism, certain things are set, so that it's going to be inevitable that you're going to have certain things. In the Depression, it's inevitable that you're going to get, workers thrown out, say, what, by the 100 a week. So they've got this specially installed part of the news each week. I don't know what day it comes on, but there's one day in that comes on my television each week. At the end, and start saying how many jobs have been lost and gained. It's been an established part of the news of capitalism. And I think that, you know, you've got a choice. Our friend at the back says takes a very pessimistic view and says, well, you know, that's the way of the world, 80 years. 80 years is a very short time today. I always think that when people quote that figure. 80 years is not very much when you're talking about, in terms of history and change. And that's one person's life, isn't it? It's not very much. And so, there's an awful lot to gain. I would agree with what these people are saying about trade union action, though, that you've got to do it. There's no question about it. You know, in capitalism, you've actually got to take part. Otherwise, you're in the position of what Marx once said, of being crushed into one uniform band of wretches. If you don't take action to protect your standards of living and the standards of your wages. You've got to take action to do it. But what it is, it's running up a down escalator. You're never getting anywhere with trade unionism. All you're doing is putting in an awful lot of work, an awful lot of effort, a headache, in order to get a best where you were when you started. And very often it's not effective. Action over certain things, like the miners' action, is very difficult to be successful in, because capitalism says we produce for profits. We produce that which we can market successfully, and that's the way it is. And you can't modify capitalism to work in a way which is in all our interests. As long as the majority of people agree, you know, to a social system which says that you've got to dance to the tune of the cash registers and produce coal only so far as it can be sold, or produce cars only so far as they can be sold, or build houses only so far as people can afford to buy them or pay rent for them, then that's the lot. That's the way society works. And there's no way of sort of making slight alterations to make that system work in our interest. It's got to be gotten rid of lock, stock and barrel, which won't be done with trade unionism. And as the speaker said, you know, the more you get encouraged to think that trade unionism is the be-all and end-all of what the working class struggle is all about, then the more that we're deluding ourselves. So it's got to be done. I agree with that part, and also the conclusion that the only real thing worth spending any time and energy on is working out the other way.
Can I just take up quite quickly this point that Comrade Sutter made about the police training for the next riots and so on. In the film that we saw the miners laughing at the curious spectacle of the police watching down in their, you know, like a alternating music. And we've also heard somebody today say, oh, well, we released our members of the working class. Quite true. But in the miners' strike, it wasn't the miners who came off best, it was the police who came off best. They were the ones who had the fewest people killed. The miners who were killed, the miners who had their accidents, and not the police. So, in building up this picture, the police are, you know, members of the working class, just like we are. We should be careful and think, well, they are rather peculiar members of the working class.
Hello, Chairman, comrades, friends. I think the outstanding thing in all our meetings that you go to, listen, the outstanding thing is the knowledge, if you like, or the ignorance of most people of capitalism. Now it's strange, you know, we take for granted capitalism. Well, you hear it, as somebody said earlier on about lesser time on the television, how we can make capitalism have a much better face, if you like, more human. It's not that easy. Understanding capitalism takes some time. When you understand capitalism, then you'll have a better idea what socialism is all about. And it's so easy, and I mean this, I've been in the trade union movement, yes, played a part. I could have gone a long way, a very long way, if I was prepared to accept that leadership.
And the expenses.
The point is this, you are limited. The Socialist Party President is limited, and all socialists worldwide are limited in what you can do in the trade union movement. You can do a certain amount, yes, but when you recognise, as we well do, that the trade union movement is an appendix of the state, it is. There's no doubt about it. More and more you see this. Now, one could argue about what Karl Marx said, yes, but we must, as socialists, and we must do this, and that is, we are living now. We have the knowledge that Karl Marx, Engels, and these, it's all there for us. But we are living under capitalism, 1986. Why I say that is this. I would think myself, personally, I would prefer to probably have lived in the days of Karl Marx, or people like him, because I could imagine what socialism would be. But by Christ, I am living in 1986, and I am looking at what capitalism is like today. This cancer,
It is cancer, and don't deny it. It is a killer. Can anybody really say here that it is not killing people by the thousands? Look at your mental hospitals. Apart from your ordinary hospitals, look at your mental hospitals. Look at the rate of suicides. And may I say this? Look how hard it is to keep your sanity every day we live. Now look here, it is easy to accept and say, oh, the working class are sick. It's very easy to say these things. What are we saying? We are saying that against ourselves. Who the hell are we? Is there some bloody God up there that created each individual to be, you know, something different? In the sense, when I say that, we are different, naturally enough, in many ways, which is a good thing, but in the sense that if you claim that you have all knowledge of the socialist case, let's have it. If you've got the answer, let's have it. The real answer. If you can say you can make capitalism work, let's have it. They've all tried. Your politicians, you ever notice them dribbling out of the mouth? You notice that brown stuff running down their mouth? What is it? Bullshit! That's what it is. It's running down their mouth day in, day out. And there are plenty of that, I assure you. But when you say the Labour Party, what has that done in the last 8 years? It's done a terrible lot. A terrible lot of damage. What has it done? It's deluded the working class, and it's trying to delude them continually. Now the question is, how long, yes, I would say, how long must we let these criminals get away with it? That is the question. Not to fall out among ourselves and accuse different sections of the working class of being fools or tick or whatever it may be. Oh no. Because there's one thing certain, as I said, and I repeat, capitalism. When you read the paper, and when it says there's youngsters, certain youngsters, groups of youngsters, getting ready, being schooled, for what? To sell themselves. Where did you hear that? To sell themselves. What a great society. It's marvellous, isn't it? So you're all prostitutes. That's what we are, in the true sense of the word.
There's 2 points I wanted to make. One was that this idea that police are working class. I think it's important that we, you know, the police are working class, and I think it's dangerous when people start saying that they are peculiar members of the working class. I've got a friend who's in the army, right? Now, if he was in this room now, nobody would say he's peculiar. He's an ordinary human being. He's got ideas which he thinks going in the army is somehow protecting. In his little branch, in fact, we have two members who used to be in the army and have now become socialists, and very good socialists in the sense of doing a lot of work and things. Now, so we can't say that because members of the working class act to think they have a stake in the system, that then they are somehow peculiar. You know, people do change their ideas. If they can't change their ideas, then we shouldn't be here. You know, if we work on the assumption that people, as you know, the guy at the back said that workers are stupid, you know, and you're saying that workers are in the police force are peculiar workers. What does that mean, they're peculiar workers? You know, in what sense are they peculiar? They're no more part of the conference group that was being mentioned before than other workers. So I think we should get that straight from the beginning. You know, members, you know, people that are in the workforce are members of the working class, full stop. The second point I wanted to mention was this: that it's okay. Obviously, you can criticise the Socialist Party. It's been going 80 years. Fair enough. The speaker's already pointed out that it hasn't been fruitless. We have kept the idea going of the only alternative. And that was the question I was going to pose was, what other way can you get rid of the problems that we face unless we introduce a socialist system.
Right, if we haven't got any more urgent questions or somebody really wants to make a point.
Before I came, I'm not asking a question, but I just want to make a point.
Sure.
Before I came out tonight, I was delayed and thought I was going to be late for the meeting. And a friend of ours rang up from the Gone to God Manchester. Her daughter is 17 now, and 2 years ago when she was 15, the father died, and the girl was a very nice, very pleasant little girl. She went a bit odd and she started stealing, and she stole stupid things like pounds of sausages out of Sainsbury's and pens and a load of diaries and things like that, and she got more and more involved with the police in a place like God Manchester, which is quite a small place and much more known there than would be around here, for instance. Anyway, the result of it was that she went before the magistrate on several occasions, and 4 months ago they put her in a youth detention centre at Hockley near Southend, and we visited her a number of times. And she spoke of when one of the things she'd done, she'd driven a motorbike without a licence, without insurance, and very stupidly, I thought, without a crash helmet, which made her obvious. Now, the police sort of pounded her in their Rover and drove her off the road, which they shouldn't have done. She finished up upside down, a few cuts and bruises in the ditch, and the police just drove off and left her, you see. Now, her solicitor advised them to take action against the police on that. And one of the things, just before she came out of the detention centre, they said, she said, oh, I shall probably come out, Mum, but you can wait for me, but there will probably be a gate arrest. In other words, when she comes out the gate, the police are waiting, they arrest her again because of what she'd done to them. But if she had agreed to drop that charge of them running her into the ditch, then they would drop the charge against her. Now, she's been home a fortnight, and Gina, her mother, rang up tonight and said, you know, is there any chance of her coming to stay with you? Because there's all this harassment from the police. The solicitor has advised us that she could get somewhere else. So we said, yeah, okay, you know, send her down on the coach tomorrow. I'll meet her and we'll take her in. And generally, it's interest in woodwork and things like that. That's what I'm looking for, in fact, that's really I've been trying to interest her. She's got, you know, no rent control because her mother is out looking after geriatric people 5 nights a week, working all night. So it's one of those situations. She's a bright, intelligent girl. But, I mean, this is what the police are like. They ran her into the ditch, they've given her harassment since she's been back, and, you know, okay, yes, the police are members of the working class, they work for wage. But as we can see, as we have seen in that film, they are a very different breed. I mean, as Steve there said, they're members of the working class and it stops there. I don't think it stops there. There are a few decent policemen about. I mean, I know where I live, a policeman was off duty and he was driving home and he saw a fire in a house and he went up and he pulled this chap out, Pakistani chap, pulled him down the stairs and then went up through the smoke, through the stairs again and pulled another one out. So there are policemen who do that sort of thing. But by and large, they are the representatives of the state, they carry out the law. And not only do they do that, but they do that in a particularly brutal way, I think, and they have a great deal of suspicion for anyone who isn't dressed in an old fuddy-duddy way like I am, you know. And I think that they are, very largely, your enemy, and that they will stop at almost nothing. And increasingly so, I firmly believe that violence breeds violence, and as Gary said, you know, this business of the new film tonight and the machinery that they're using, the armoured cars, I forget the name, all that sort of thing, you know. I mean, however much, and here one must agree with the socialist position of understanding rather than a violent revolution, the more violence you put against the police, the more power and violence they can bring against you and your limited discharge and tips and things like that. But I don't think one should underestimate the rather diverse and obtuse attitude of the police. I don't think they are just men of the working class. Technically they are, but we go further than that.
Okay, I want to return to the sort of the main topic of this evening, namely trade unions, and to reiterate the point that I think that trade unions are vital in capitalism to protect workers' interests in their day-to-day economic struggles with their bosses. But we must never forget that they are essentially defensive organisations and cannot be a vehicle for any meaningful or lasting change. And that we need a political movement that can organise effectively to bring about the only change that's worth striving for, namely socialism. So therefore I would say that to answer the question, what can trade unionists do to change society? Then I would say that within their trade unions, socialists must be committed to the idea of political education and organisation within trade unions. But trade unions only represent just one forum in which this can take place. I mean, it should take place all the time. I mean, everybody meets people wherever they go, and there are all sorts of ways in which you can engage in political discussion with people to draw out what's wrong with society and to show that there is a real alternative. But to achieve socialism requires the unity of the working class, working together cooperatively and democratically. And trade unions can give workers their first taste of working class solidarity and the experience of collective action and the benefits that that can bring. And then that experience can be an important one. But it's a very sad fact that for many workers, as we've heard to some extent this evening, that working within trade unions, their experience within trade unions is not a positive experience. That they don't get the feeling of cooperation, democracy and participation. And in fact, at present, faced with the challenge of economic recession and a capitalist class that's seemingly intent on smashing the trade union movement, the response of the trade union movement as a whole hasn't been to stand together to protect their common interests. It's in fact to break down into factions, to engage in competition rather than cooperation, creating divisions not just within the trade union movement, but more importantly, within the working class as a whole. And those divisions are divisions which the capitalist class is only too ready to exploit. It's a sad fact also that trade unions today are in general, I would argue, politically less conscious working class organisations than they were, say, a century ago. In the early days of trade unions, the slogan abolish the wages system had far more meaning than it does now. Now, it's true that to some extent that trade unionists who adopted that slogan were actually looking back to a pre-capitalist mode of production. But at least there was a recognition that working for an employer meant wage slavery. We've lost, to a large extent, that understanding. So perhaps the most important thing that a trade unionist can do, a socialist trade unionist, can help is to help to bring back that idea of abolishing the wages system back onto the political agenda.